Hey everybody, welcome back to the Live Beyond podcast. My name is Jacqueline and I'm here with Dr. Vanderpool and we are continuing our Living Missionally series. This is episode 5 and this week we're going to be talking about how to seek the ways of God. So Dr. V, would you mind telling us a little bit about why you wanted to do this series and kind of what this Living Missionally series means and just a little bit about it?
That's a great question. You know, we have brought some 6,000 or so people down from the United States to Haiti over the last 10 years. And so we have a lot of people who've experienced mission work real time. And it's just a tremendous experience. Just about everybody just really loves it. One question that we get over and over from these folks is as they're leaving, typically it's the day before they're leaving, they say, okay, this week was great, but how do I do this at home? And so that was really why we started thinking along the lines of living missionally, to try to give people a picture of what they can do in their own communities. You know, you go to Haiti, it's really pretty obvious what needs to be done. The people drink dirty water, so we need to provide them with clean water. People don't have access to health care, so we need to give them health care. People don't have enough to eat, we need to supply them with food. Those kinds of things are really pretty simple to come up with and then to implement. But when you go back to your own country, especially to the United States, that has just an abundance of everything you could possibly need, it becomes a little more murky. It's a little more difficult, I think, for us to come up with that. So that's why we started thinking along the lines of living missionally and decided to do a podcast about how to live missionally. That's what got us here.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So where are we going to start today?
You know, I love Exodus 33. It's one of my favorite passages in the Bible. So this is a place that I want to start. It's just an amazing chapter. The three or so chapters surrounding this this particular chapter are just phenomenal. But when we look at Exodus 33, verses 12 through 23, Moses said to the Lord, "Look, you have told me, lead this people up, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. You said, I know you by name, and you have found favor in my sight. Now, if I have indeed found favor in your sight, please teach me your ways, and I will know you and find favor in your sight. Now consider that this nation is your people." You know, the part of the verse that excites me so much in this Exodus 33 chapter is the part that says, "Please teach me your ways." And here is Moses, the meekest man who ever lived, who has been tapped by God to lead his people out of Egypt and into the Promised Land. Here is Moses asking God to teach him his ways. You know, when you think about the ways of God, there's a lot of depth to that. It's not something that is real obvious what that even means. But we'd like to talk about that today, see if we can come up with some clarification about what it means to know the ways of God.
So what does it mean to seek the ways of God?
You know, it's so interesting. Moses had just received the laws of God, right? I mean, just previously, a couple of chapters before, God had brought him up on the mountain and he gave him his laws that we know of as the Ten Commandments. And so when Moses now is asking the ways of God, he's obviously not asking about the laws of God. He got those not only once, he actually had to get them twice because he broke the first set, right? Boy, wouldn't that be a little bit unnerving to think, okay, yeah, you have to go back. God wrote this with his own finger and you have to go back and say, I dropped him. I'm sorry. Can you imagine? So he's not asking about teaching him his laws. I mean, he already has that, right? So this is something different from the laws of God. And I think for many of us, we grew up perhaps in a denomination or a group that stressed the laws of God to the max. And probably we got a little tired of that, right? This is a whole different thing. And one of the things I like to do, you know, I love words and I love the different languages where the words come from. And the ways of God, the word ways in Hebrew is the word derech. And derech it means a road. It means a way, something you would walk on down the road. But figuratively, it's talking about a course of life. So it's the way you live your life. It's the course of life or a mode of action. And so Moses is asking God, what is your nature? What do you like to do? He's getting real personal here. He's asking God, you know, what is the way that you want my life lived? I want to know how you live. You know, I want to know what you deem as important, the things that interest you. It's a very personal question that Moses asked. And, you know, to be honest, it took a lot of nerve, you know, to ask, you know, the God of the universe, you know, what do you enjoy? What is it that your purpose is? You know, why are you here? What do you do? But that's the kind of thing that Moses is asking God, is just that. He's really wanting to know what it is that God deems important, what it is that he the way that he lives out his existence.
Mm. So you kind of brought this up just a second ago and talking about how lots of times denominations stress more of the law than his ways. So what's a way that we can differentiate between knowing his ways, but also keeping his laws?
That's a great question. And please hear me. I think the laws of God are very important to keep, right? But I think there's a difference in what the laws are and what the ways of God, the way he approaches things. And so, you know, when we look at the Ten Commandments, and, you know, to me, they're a wonderful list of ways that we need to be able to live, especially as a society. And so if we look at these things, you know, I really think that when you consider that here are the Jewish people, they have been living in Egypt for many, many years, and they've lost their identity. They've lost their independence. They've basically just been slaves. So they don't really have a particular way of living. They don't have any laws that are governing them except for the Egyptian laws, right? And so the Ten Commandments were given to them just soon after they left Egypt. And I think God is saying, okay, here's what I want you to do. Here are the laws that are going to govern you as a society. And so I think when we look at these as societal rules, if we look at these as this is the way that we want you to approach your interactions with the people that you're around, that's a better way of thinking about the Ten Commandments rather than saying, okay, these Ten Commandments are just for me and I'm going to live this out personally. I get that. You know, we all think that way. But I think that if we'll look at them as the origin of the code that God wanted his people to live by, a people that had not had any kind of guidance in this, and God is giving them guidance so that they will live together as a society, as a group, and they'll know how to get along together. And so when we look at the Ten Commandments, you know, the first one says, have no other gods before me. So this is oriented toward honoring God. Basically, this one is saying, I'm in charge here. I am your leader. I am your king. You know, don't have any other gods. Don't make any gods. Don't do anything that's going to try to evict me from my place as God of the Jewish people. So he's establishing the leadership structure of his people. Now, it is a little ironic. That was the one they broke right off the bat, right? You know, I mean, he hadn't even made it down the hill yet. And here they're, you know, oh, we're going to have this golden calf, right? And so the first two commandments went out the window right off the bat. So it is a little funny. But number one, have no other gods before me. He's establishing himself as the head of government. Number two, don't have idols. Don't, and this is, again, oriented toward honoring God. So these first two, actually the first three, are oriented and toward honoring God. The third one is don't misuse the name of God. And so, again, it's more than just cursing, right? It's more than just using the Lord's name, you know, in a curse. It's misrepresenting God as well. So it's talking about saying, for instance, that God said something that maybe he didn't say, right? Or that you come up with some theological construct that God's saying, no, I didn't do that, right? You just made that one up on your own. That would be misusing, you know, the name of God. The fourth one is oriented toward honoring God as well, and that is keep the Sabbath holy. Basically, again, if you look at these as ways that society can establish the norms for itself, it's saying, I want you to take Saturday off, right? I don't want you to work. You know, I want you to just focus on me, on God, and just honor God, because that's what the way he was. And so he's really talking a little bit about the ways of God, the pathway of God, the way that he likes to do things. He likes to rest on the seventh day, right? And so when he created the earth, that's the way he did it. And so if we are to follow in his footsteps, that's what we need to do. We need to honor this Sabbath day. Now we sort of get into, starting at the fifth law, Ten Commandments, we're starting to look at civilized society. And so God really defines what civilized society looks like. And the fifth one is honor your father and mother. That's oriented toward keeping a cohesive family unit together, trying to keep the family as a unit that helps each other, that honors each other, that when the father and mother are elderly, the kids take care of the father and mother. When the kids are young, the father and mother take care of the kids. And so this is just a way to keep our society civilized. It's talking about honoring your father and mother. This is two people who are in the household together that the kids are honoring. And so he's setting up the structure for a godly household, saying it's a man and a woman, father and mother, the kids are there, the father and mother are honored by the kids. A civilized society. Number six continues that same theme. It says don't murder. Right? Don't kill each other. Civilized society doesn't do that, right? And so when we have that idea that, okay, one of the laws is, certainly this is a law of our land, that you just can't go murdering people. That's one of the laws. Again, it's for a civilized society. Number seven, don't commit adultery. Again, this is a civilized society type orientation where people can't just go around and commit adultery with whomever they see We're not animals, right? We're humans. We're created in the image of God. God sets these rules. This isn't to keep us from having fun. This is to keep our civilization intact. And so, and we can even see that today. When you see civilizations that don't honor marriage, then those civilizations start to decay. Rome was a perfect example of that. So number eight is, again, the same thought process. Don't steal, right? So a civilized society, you can't maintain any degree of civilization if folks are just stealing stuff all the time, right? You can't maintain a business if they're burning it down, they're stealing the stuff inside the business. And so, again, this is a hallmark of civilization. Now, in uncivilized societies, stealing is rampant, right? And murder is rampant, and we see that. And so this is, again, God describing what he wants his civilization to look like. Number nine continues the same idea. Don't bear false witness against your neighbor. And this is interesting because this is a legal term. This isn't just lying. So this isn't telling a white lie, you know, to your friend. This is bearing a false witness in a legal case. This is saying, you know, so-and-so did something when they didn't do that. And you're testifying against them and you're saying he's guilty of this crime. I saw him do it, but it's false. And so, again, this is a hallmark of civilization, is that we take our legal proceedings with gravity, that they're very important, and that we don't bear false witness. Number 10, don't covet. Again, civilization dictates, you know, that we need to appreciate each other, that we need to help each other, that we help our neighbors. We don't covet what our neighbors have. We build them up. And so these laws are here, these Ten Commandments are here to provide a framework to have a God-honoring, stable society. And it amazes me that we're taking the Ten Commandments off of our courthouses, right? I mean, here's the very place they need to be. I mean, our legal system is based on these particular laws. And it's amazing that we have a movement afoot to undermine civilization. And that's what we're going to see. We've seen it historically over and over, again, referencing Rome. We see the underpinnings of the Roman society being absolutely destroyed and the Roman civilization completely disappearing because they did not respect these basic laws. But, you know, it's interesting. That's not what we're talking about when we say, teach me your ways. And so it's so fascinating to me. You know, in verse 13, Moses says, now, if I have indeed found favor in your sight, God had told him he found favor in his sight. So Moses is using God's words sort of against him in a way. He said, okay, if I have indeed found favor in your sight, please teach me your ways. And look what comes out of that. Then I will know you. And then he says it again, and find favor in your sight. Isn't it interesting? You know, we all want to be, you know, have favor in the people we respect. If it's our parents, we want to know that, you know, we are favorable to them, that we find favor in their eyes. And here is Moses talking to God saying, I really want to find favor in your sight. I want to be the favorite kid, basically is what he's saying, right? And so if we know his ways, right, then we find favor. You know, this reminds me a lot of how we raise children. You know, we have laws in our families. For instance, we may say your curfew is 11 o'clock and you've got to be home by 11 o'clock. That's a law, right? And that is saying, this is what I want from you. But that's not relational. That's not the way of our family, right? That's not the way of our dad or our mom. That's just something he wants done so that the family can, you know, maintain its integrity. And so this is very similar, I think. And so when Moses is saying, teach me your ways, and then I will know you, I think that's really significant. And isn't it amazing how relational that is? That statement by Moses is such a relational thing. He's saying, I want to know you, God. And so if you'll teach me your ways, then I know you. If I know your laws, I don't know you, right? That doesn't translate. I know what you want. I know what you want me to do, right? But I don't know you as a being. And so I think that's what Moses is asking for. And, you know, it's what an impetus, you know, what an encouragement to say, if we understand God's ways, then we're finding favor in his sight. And my goodness, that is an amazing thing to be able to say, is I have favor in God's sight. And that's something Moses could say. You know, he really did. So, you know, I think too, you know, from a parent standpoint, can you imagine God's delight when Moses answered him that question? I mean, it's like, okay, I got your laws. I got that. I'm going to keep them. No problem. But, you know, I want to know you. I want to know what you like. What's your favorite color? You know, whatever, you know, but I want to be really relational. Can you imagine what God's response was? I mean, that would tickle a parent, right? I mean, a parent would be so happy about that, you know, if his child said that. So I imagine God, you know, had that delight. So, you know, we're going from a rule-based relationship, right, from the Ten Commandments, which is essential, especially when you're young. You know, you give two-year-olds rules, right, and three-year-olds. As your children grow, you go away from rules and more toward just sort of expectations. This is the way our family functions. We'd like for you to continue functioning in our family that way, right? And so it's, you know, as teenagers, if you impose rules, doesn't work out too well for either party, right? If you want and desire your teenagers to be relational with you, then you want them to know your ways and the ways of the family. And so I see this as a maturation process. Moses got the Ten Commandments twice, and he knew what was going on with that. And then he said, you know, I got the rules, but I want more than this. I want to go deeper with you, Lord. I want to know your ways. And I think that this is an appropriate response from us as we mature. If we stay in the rule-based mentality, well, God said this, so I'm going to do it. You know what? That's great. It's just not a very mature approach. If we say, I'm going to do this because it's the ways of God. I know what he wants. I know his thoughts. I know what he's, you know, what his approach is to life. That's a mature process. And that's, I think, what Moses is looking at here. You know, the thing that I think is sort of interesting, and again, this is getting back to words, is, you know, when he says, I'll find favor in your sight, that Hebrew word is really a neat word. The Hebrew word is hin, and it means acceptance or even elegance. You know, so it's not just, okay, you're a good kid, run along and play. It's not that. There's more to it. It's an acceptance into the family. It's an elegance. It's not ham-handed, sort of like laws are. You're going to do this or you're grounded. You know, that's blunt, right? It's more of a relational. It's a sweet interaction. It's an elegant process. And I like that. I like that idea that our relationship with God grows into something that is really elegant. And that, what a great way to look at that. You know, the thing that I think is interesting too, you know, following God's laws don't make us holy, right? That's just to have the basis for societal interaction. I mean, we're basically just getting the very bottom floor of having a civilized society, following these Ten Commandments. Because keeping the Ten Commandments really isn't all that difficult, right? I mean, you haven't killed anybody lately, right? You know, but the thing that makes us holy is that relationship with God. And what a cool thing is that we become holy and separate, set apart because of this relationship that God allows us to have with Him through Jesus Christ. And that, what a wonderful thing. You know, one of the ways that God showed Moses His way, the ways of God, is He told him His name. Isn't that fascinating that God told him, called Moses His name? His name is not God, right? That's what He is. He's God, right? But that's not His name. I mean, I may be a man, you're a woman, but that's not your name, right? That's who you are. But His name is Yahweh. And that's, I mean, that's His name. And when we want to get personal with somebody, we know their name. And so here Moses was asking, please teach me your ways. Well, one of the ways he did that is he said, okay, fine. I'm gonna proclaim my name to you. Nobody had heard this before. This was new. Nobody knew his name that we know of, right? Until Moses came along. And so, you know, Moses famously asked to see his glory. That was sort of his next step. You know, Moses sort of went at this incrementally. You know, he got the laws first and then the ways. He wanted to see his glory. I mean, he just kept asking for more and more, which I think is so cool. You know, that's what God wants. And so God says, well, you can't see me, right? You can't see my face, you know, because it'll kill you, but I'll let you see my back, right? And so God covered him into the cleft of the rock. We all know the story. And God went by him proclaiming his name. And so here Moses was the first one in the history of mankind to know God's name. And how cool is that, to know that the ways of God, you know his name. And he knows your name. And he knew Moses' name, right? So, and it says elsewhere in Exodus that God spoke to Moses like a friend speaks with his friend, you know. And so that's a tight relationship, you know. It's not stilted. It's not formal. You know, there's no echo in the room, you know, when he says, you know, I'm Lord or whatever. It's just two guys sitting on the couch talking with each other, right? He spoke with Moses as a friend spoke with his friend. And I think that's just so amazing that he did that. But the thing about teaching Moses his ways is as he went by him, covered him up with his hand so that his glory wouldn't kill Moses, and he proclaimed his name. But then he explained who he was. He went by Moses and he proclaimed, Yahweh is a compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger and rich in faithful love and truth, maintaining faithful love to a thousand generations, forgiving wrongdoing, rebellion, and sin. But he will not leave the guilty unpunished. Those are his ways. If we want to know what God's ways are, there it is. He tells us his name and he says, I'm compassionate, I'm gracious, I'm slow to anger, I'm rich in faithful love and truth, and I maintain faithful love to a thousand generations, forgiving wrongdoing, rebellion, and sin. When we know that about God, we really know God. Isn't that an amazing statement? How many people think of God that way? oh, he's this scary father figure, you know. He's this terrible, has no patience with our wrongs. And I mean, it's a tough kind of love. But that's not who God is. He's compassionate. You know, compassionate means he's with us. He's passionately with us. He's not above us. He's with us. He's beside us. And so I think that is just such an amazing thing. You know, the last part about knowing God or knowing God's ways, I think is really amazing. You know, Moses said in verse 15, if your presence does not go, don't make us go up from here. How will it be known that I and your people have found favor in your sight unless you go with us? I and your people will be distinguished by this from all the other people on the face of the earth, that God is with us, right? Isn't that an amazing thing, that that's the way of God, is that he is with us? We know that God showed him his glory. He says that he caused his goodness, all of his goodness, to pass in front of Moses. Isn't that an amazing thought? That the ways of God are goodness. That's a goodness. He has so much good in him that when we know him, we know his goodness. And he says, I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. Isn't that an amazing thought? Those are the ways of God.
That's so good. So what changes when we understand the ways of God?
You know, that's an amazing thing. The transformation from going from the laws of God, we still maintain the laws of God. I'm not saying that we're going to leave them alone, but that we're transformed from that relationship, a law type relationship, into a relationship that is personal. We know the ways of God. There's a lot of things that change, and one of them is we know that we know him, right? You know, if somebody comes up and says something about my wife, Laurie, right? And I'll say, you know, that's absolutely false, because I know the way she is, and I know she wouldn't have done that, right? So I'll be able to spot, after 39 years of marriage, right, a lie about my spouse, because I know how she is. And so when we know that we know somebody, we have that confidence of where they are. So we have this relational change that takes place. We also know that we found favor with God, that he really likes us. I mean, if we're going to put that in the vernacular, that's what that means. He likes us, right? It's sort of one thing to say, well, he loves us. Yeah, he does that, right? But he likes us. You know, I think that's something people need to hear, that the God of this universe, the uncreated one, right? He likes you. He thinks you're a neat person, right? He wants to be with you. That's a concept that I think if we could grasp, we would just be on fire. It would just completely change our life. Because if God is for us, who can be against us, right? If God likes us, what difference does it make if anybody else doesn't, right? It may be the case, but we know that we found favor with him. You know, the thing is that he also said that his presence will go with us and will give us rest. Don't you love that? He will give us rest, that his presence is always there, right? He said, I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. His presence is there with us because he likes us, and he gives us rest. How many of us need rest? We're seeking it in different ways that don't work very well, but the way to get true rest is to know the ways of God, and He gives it to us, just flat out gives it to us. And I think that is an amazing thought. You know, so often we've all, you know, in our past have experienced, you know, some kind of mountaintop experience, right? We've been, maybe it was a church camp when we were a kid, and maybe it was a worship service, maybe it was a concert we went to, something we just felt like we were filled up. But it was fleeting, right? You know, you go back and you get back into the normal routine, and it's just not the same. But God is saying His presence is continually with us. That mountaintop experience doesn't have to end. He's always there with us, and He's giving us rest. You know, the other things that change when we have this idea is we are distinguished from all other people. Isn't that an amazing thought? It's an amazing thought to say we are separate. We're different from everybody else in the world. And, you know, I think it's interesting that so many people are just desperate to be distinguishable. Maybe they dye their hair green, right? And they say, yeah, you know that green-haired girl? Oh, yeah, I know her. She's pretty distinguished, right? Maybe they dress a different way. You know, most cultures go through this, and they just desperate to be particularly different. But God says He makes us that way. You know, it's interesting that religions have tried this. So, you know, you look at the ultra Orthodox Jewish people that grow, you know, the men will grow their hair at their sideburns and even curl it with curlers. And that is, you know, showing that they are a distinguished people, that they keep that law that God gave them. They wear different hats. They wear different clothes. The Amish people do similar things. They wear clothes from previous centuries, and they look different. They don't participate in mechanization as much. And so this striving to be different, even in the Christian religion, you know, we see people wearing crosses. We see certain religions that wear different clothes. You know, Catholic priests wear different clothes, and cardinals, and the Pope, and people like that. So there's always this effort, this desire to be different. But God says that the distinguishing mark will be not the way we dress, not what our sideburns look like, but that God is with us, that He is actually with us, and that will be the difference. So it's really amazing when you start thinking about the changes. We see His goodness. You know, and I think one thing that when God said to Moses, you're going to see My goodness, you know, we can live like that. We can say in any circumstance that we're in, I see God's goodness. We see a sunrise, we see a sunset, and we're inspired because of the goodness of God. We see the majesty of the mountains, a river, a lake, the ocean, so many creations of His. We can see His goodness. And you know, it's a challenge because many times, particularly in this time, we're seeing a lot of bad that's going on. We can see a lot of struggles, and oftentimes that's overwhelming to us. But if we can see the goodness of God in everything, then we're going to be changed in a way because we know who He is. Knowing His name as Yahweh is an amazing thing. Knowing Jesus' name, right, and praying in Jesus' name, these are all tremendously personal ways that we can know the ways of God.
So how do we get to know the ways of God?
You know, I think that's a great question. And, you know, it is a gift. The first thing we need to do is what Moses did. He asked God. And so I think we need to pray for God to teach us His ways just like Moses did. What a wonderful pattern that is. You know, when we get this, you know, be prepared to see the glory of God. That's what happened to Moses. Moses says, teach me your ways. Well, the way God did that was an object lesson, right? He says, okay, here it goes. You know? And so, you know, in a way, it's sort of like fastening your seatbelts. You know, you're going to get to see some stuff you've never seen. And so ask God first and be prepared to receive what you've asked for. Moses asked to see his glory, and God showed it to him. It's pretty phenomenal. You know, one of the things, too, that I think is terribly important is something that C.S. Lewis talks about a lot, and that is, you know, as we are called closer to God, and this is what we're talking about, we're sort of going from a legalistic relationship, which is, you know, that's far away. That's not real personal. We're saying we want more. We want to be a lot closer to God. The expectations start to rise as well. And so God expects us to be obedient. The closer we get to God, the more He wants us to be obedient to Him. And there's less, you know, there's less wiggle room. There's less room for us to just to do the things that we want to do. We have to follow the things that God wants us to do. And the closer we get to God, that's one of the things that we feel.
Okay. And my very last question for you is, what does it mean to know the ways of God?
Well, you know, successful missional living requires that we know the ways of God. We just can't do it without that. If we are still in a legalistic relationship with God, we will just not understand the continual missional living that He's wanting from us. We understand the laws and the teachings of God. We understand about God. You know, and unfortunately, a lot of what we hear in church is we're just learning about God. We're learning facts about God, facts about Jesus. We're memorizing a scripture, and that's just some additional fact that we know. That's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about, you know, getting a whole bunch of facts and putting them together. That's not the ways of God. Those are the facts of God, right? It's a whole lot like, you know, the story here. The dad had a bunch of kids, and he decided that he was just going to write a book, tell his life story in this book, and then pass it out to the kids, and that ought to be fine for raising kids, right? Well, obviously, that's a ridiculous story. That the kids would not know any more about the ways of their dad reading that book. They would just know facts. He was born on this date. He went to this elementary school, you know, that kind of thing. And so this is the difference. And so when we're living missionally, we're knowing the ways of God and that the course of life or the mode of action. And the course of life for God is He wants everyone to be saved, right? That He so loved the world that He gave His only Son so that all could be in relationship with the Father. That's the course of life. That's the mode of action for God. That's what we're about, right? That's it. That's the whole thing. There's a lot to that. I don't mean to minimize it, but that is the type thing that He wants us to take. The journey that God wants us to take is bringing people to Him. Whatever means that takes, whether it's your next door neighbor, whether it's people in Haiti, whether it's a people on the other side of the world, until the whole world comes to know that Jesus is Lord, our journey's not ended. And so that's what He wants from us. It's not spreading the laws of God. That didn't ever convert anybody, right? But letting people know what God is, that He's a compassionate God, that He's kind, that he is lovingly faithful for 1,000 generations. Now that's compelling. So moving beyond the laws of God and into his ways really propels us into a usefulness in his kingdom. He's saying, okay, I can use that person. Look how he used Moses. Moses learned his ways, and oh my goodness, I mean, it was the start of the relationship for tens of thousands of generations of people. And so that's what he really is looking for us, is we know his ways, then we walk on the road, on the path that he is on. The path that Jesus is on is to reconcile the sinful world to the Father.
Mm. Well, and how cool is it that those two things happen at the same time, you know, where he gave his laws and how important it was for society to, you know, be a civilized society, but then also gave this access of knowing him, that it was, there was an equal of importance, you know, that it wasn't just follow my laws and, you know, period, you're done, but I want you to have a successful society, but I also, you know, have that father heart of like, I want to have that relationship with you. I think that's so beautiful.
Absolutely. And civilized society doesn't save anybody, right? You know, that's the problem. It doesn't save anybody. It has a nice society, right? But what saves people is Jesus Christ, you know, and being saved through him and reconciled to the Father through him. And so that's why this is so important, I think.
Oh, that's so good. You nailed it on the head. That was perfect. That was just really, really good. Well, I think that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for joining me. But before you go, we have one last thing that we need to talk about. You wrote a book that came out back in January, and I never want to end an episode without talking about it because truly, it is so good, and everyone needs to hear about it. So tell us a little bit about your book.
You know, we were so fortunate to get to write this book and publish it this year. And it really goes through the transition that we made as a family from living a life here in the United States, just like everybody else, and transitioning into being full-time missionaries in the field. And so I had a successful surgical practice here in the United States and sold all of that, gave away our possessions, sold the possessions. It was always a little bit disconcerting because people didn't want our stuff. You know, that really hurts your feelings. So we actually had to throw a bunch of stuff away. But it's been, you know, new way for us and our family following the ways of God. It's just been such an amazing journey for us. We're not encumbered by material things. We're pretty mobile. It doesn't take a whole lot for us to get from point A to point B with all of our possessions. And God wants that from us. He wants us to be able to go on a moment's notice where he needs us to go. And so, and this book talks a lot about becoming a willing servant of God and truly being able to move when he says move. And so, book's available on Amazon. So please go to Amazon and buy it and read it. Tell your friends about it. We appreciate that.
And it's called Live Beyond, A Radical Call to Surrender and Serve. You can also find it on our website. So that is livebeyond.org. If you're wanting to learn a little bit more about what Live Beyond does and what we're doing in Haiti right now and all the other different countries that we're working in at the moment, you can go online to livebeyond.org. And if you also feel like it has been put on your heart, please consider making a donation so that we can continue being a part of the work that the Lord is doing in Haiti. But I think that is it for this week. Thank you so much. And we will see you next week for episode 6 of our Living Missionally series.